On this episode of the Reflex Blue Show, Nate Voss returns as we interview Jen and Ken Visacchio Grady.
Donovan Berry.
We're Nate Voss.
I'm
What's going
Nate.
On?
You're Donovan.
Yes.
How are you doing?
Not bad. A little tired. Not bad. We're still in room 3000 in the Scone Center. Thank you.
In the room 3000. Yeah, so it is now weeks and weeks past How Design Live. We are in the future.
The future of the year 3000, maybe.
Yes. But in the past, we were at How Design Live, and it is Monday afternoon, and we're sitting down with our besties, and we're going to do a show, right?
Yeah, so welcome, Ken, Jen, Visacchio Grady's.
Hi, guys.
Ken
Hi.
And Jen, how are you guys doing?
Great.
Guys, did you guys get in today, yesterday? What is your schedule?
Just got
here?
Off a plane.
About really?
2 hours ago?
Yeah, about 2 hours ago.
So you really just got here.
This was the first thing we chose to do.
Oh, yeah. Man. Awesome.
It's the first thing on our
And then after this, you're out of here, right?
They like that thing where, you know, they got a scab. They're just going to rip that Band-Aid off, like, immediately.
Yeah.
And just...
We got this terrible thing we have to go do. Just talk to Nate and Donovan.
We're doing this first.
Yeah.
If we can get past that intimidating microphone, we can survive tomorrow.
That gold-plated, shining...
That's a lot of microphone.
That's like a Rush Limbaugh microphone.
Yeah. This is my first experience with this microphone as well. So it's Monday. You guys missed out on, all of the festivities last night. But you traveled today, so I'm going to say we're all at about the same energy level right now.
Yeah, travel equals hangover.
And you guys come in from Cincinnati?
Cleveland. Yeah.
Cleveland. It was Cincinnati, I believe, where I met you guys
the
first time at that Midwest AIGA leadership retreat, want to say 35 years ago.
Feels
and
like it.
You guys
40.
Look great for you know, 60.
Nate
I just want to say.
Every year of it right now.
Yeah. After
it's
coming up after coming
stairs.
Up after coming up like six flights of stairs. Gotta work off that.
Stairs.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah. Trying to tighten it down. We are all not aging as gracefully as Ken, who is putting Rob Lowe to shame here.
You have some fabulous hair.
Oh,
that is almost Bradley Cooper-like, since you guys probably can't see his hair. Because
you look great also.
Oh, it is
Donovan looks
isn't it?
Terrible.
Oh, I show.
Donovan's
I
got
show
his dad beard on now.
For every year you've aged, I've aged three.
You
yes.
need a bearded
A child will do that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we've been doing this thing for 36 Point for the last year and a half in Omaha. It's called 36 Pints. And we just invite the AIGA group kind of quit doing their social hour for some reason, so we just brought it back. And AIGA has been thankful. They've actually sponsored or co-sponsored two of the last six of them. So we had like a lot of, I mean, we get, the last one we had like over 40 people show up to it. It was crazy.
Okay.
And the time before that, it was only, you know, AIGA wasn't involved in that one, but it was at the Dundee Dell.
Okay.
And I think we had about 24 people come through, and three of which drove in from like Kent, Ohio. On their way to Seattle, and you know, they branded their little road trip like Design Nation and stuff.
Okay, the design hobos of yesteryear.
Yeah, but
remember those guys? They were all right guys.
No, one of them got a job. One of the guys there got a job, and so they were driving to his job with two of his friends, and then the other two guys were going to take off. You know, let's move to Seattle via Omaha, And so they mentioned where they're coming from, because one of them actually, I think, interned with another guy that comes to these events sometimes.
Okay.
And I said, do you know the Visacchio Grady's? And they said, yes, we know Ken. And then I heard he changed my life.
I don't know about that.
Ken, talk to me about the lives about you've changed. What were the most important ones?
Wow.
I mean, so some of your students might hold you in high regard, whether or not they tell you
some
or not.
Some of them might hold me in high regard, but I think that there are more of them that might not like me very much.
Don't we all kind of feel bad for our former students who still hold us in high regard?
We should introduce that.
Don't we feel like they should have moved on if they're becoming
for my former students? I feel bad for my current students.
We should mention, where are you guys teaching right now?
Go ahead.
I am at Cleveland State, which is right in downtown Cleveland. I'm the chair of the art department, and so my faculty to get to suffer through me as well.
And I'm at Kent State. I'm the incoming graduate coordinator.
So you guys are like, are they rival schools? Or
no,
is it just...
Not really.
They kind of serve a different mission. They're both
state
schools.
Do you guys have
schools,
football teams that play against each other?
Cleveland State does not have a football team.
Yeah, no. Cleveland State
and Kent
have football
does, and it's
we
better
have
now.
Football, yeah, we have
but
a football
But when we
team.
Were there for like 1,000 years, I don't think they won a game once. So
no, but the football team is better now.
That's
we
good.
Were, we were in the GoDaddy Bowl.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
We did get to
yeah,
a bowl game.
Wow.
We got...
the GoDaddy
Go has
we
a bowl.
We were beaten by Huskies or Muskies.
We were beaten by
something.
The Huskies.
I bet you the branding
which runs
of that
the Muskies,
bowl
but they're both wild
amazing.
Animals. I bet it is.
All I can think of, the only thing I can think of when I hear GoDaddy was a live Super Bowl like tweeting of I don't think I could hate anything as much as GoDaddy hates women, but it's good to know that they've got a bowl out there, and that Kent State made it.
Yeah,
so
Kent State
congratulations.
Made it. Kent State made it to the GoDaddy Bowl.
Yeah. Forgive me because I keep up with you guys on Facebook and everything, but I don't always keep up with jobs. When I first met you guys, you worked or had a relationship to Nspace.
Correct.
I believe. Now, is that still a thing?
You know, Nspace still is a thing. A couple years ago when Jen and I published our first book and our daughter was born and we started working on our second book.
By a couple years, you mean six.
Six.
Sure.
You know, we have two business partners, Paul Pruchinsky and Craig Imes, and we wanted to take some time and focus on writing and speaking and raising our daughter and teaching, you know, because it's a full-time job. And so what we did is we went through a process of franchising Nspace. And Paul and Craig own their own franchises, and Jen and I have kind of taken a prolonged sabbatical from it.
But we do the occasional job through Nspace.
I gotcha.
And we are now sort of branching into VasakiOGrady.com because we can't think of anything more creative to call it, or we can't agree on anything to call it, but it's more of a site for our books. And
do you hyphenate the URL or do you run it all together?
No, we run
it's
it all together.
Oh man, you run it all together. You hyphenate in life. I feel like it. Oh. I feel like there's some branding consistency. We're going to work through
it. We're going to work on it.
Hyphen or no hyphen as a couple, as a family.
You could buy it and redirect, yeah.
Or, wait, does that mean that with the hyphen is currently available?
As Nate pulls out his iPad,
jump on that. Right.
Yeah, I'm getting that right now. Everybody, look out! You guys might want to get that before the show airs. Donovan's going to get it and redirect to hardcore design challenges. I certainly wasn't going to say anything else. So you guys, how many books have you guys written now about design and about the process of? The first one was about research and design, right? And again,
that's
I apologize
right.
for having
and
not
you guys seem
properly
to write,
researched.
You guys seem
before.
To write the books that are like actually like intellectual, like there aren't.
That's one word for them.
Yeah, that is intellectual is one word for them.
I feel like we keep writing the books that nobody wants to write.
That is the other
right, about
right,
the
right,
subjects
right.
that aren't exactly wildly popular, but maybe need to be addressed.
Yeah. Our books do not have a lot of sex appeal, I don't think.
Research-based design. One. I mean, these are things that are great. I know the publisher is probably happy, and they're like, oh wow, we got someone to write this.
Yeah, right. We tricked somebody into writing this.
Yeah.
Or there's somebody who's interested in writing about this. Yeah.
So we have three of them. The first one was the Designer's Research Manual. Second one, Information Design Handbook. And this new one is called Design Currency, and it's all about proving value.
Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about currency and design and hardcore design challenges?
Yes.
Okay.
Right. It's a placeholder, that's
it's
for sure.
A placeholder.
Are we going?
We're going.
So the website is VasakiOGrady.com, no hyphen.
The hyphen.
I can't. Oh, man, you guys. I feel like there should be a version of the site that is hyphenated. But placeholder, as you would like to describe it, you do at least have, you know, some dimensionality and the 45-degree angle stripes, which so you know it is a legitimate website. We're all
and
about
was
that.
Done within the last
because that's what says legitimate.
5 years. Well, that means it was done within the last 5 years.
That's for sure.
Right, at the very least. Is it? Yeah. Now, if it, what we really needed to do when you take it out of placeholder is add in a little bit of ridiculous and unnecessary responsiveness to it so that the layout completely changes as I do this with my iPad, but then also get some parallax up in there.
How is the 960 grid not responsive all by itself?
Oh!
It already is responsive.
It's completely perfect.
According to their research before they designed this thing.
Yeah, should we talk about that? Actually, no. I would love to talk to you guys about design currency.
Now, this thing is, like, hot off the press. Like, I showed up at the...
not even
is it,
really
is it,
off
is it
the
new
press
writer booth?
Yep.
Yes.
I was talking to Nikki there. Was it? I think it was the day that the... I lose track of time at these events.
Well, it's because
I don't know what day of the week is.
I think it was yesterday.
Right.
And the book wasn't even there yet. She kept talking about it, but it hadn't arrived.
It's on the poster.
It's there today.
It is there today.
So when you say this thing's hot off the press, it's like hot off the press.
Hot off the press.
Oh wait, so it's
well, a month ago.
Should I?
Because
a month ago, because we're a month into the future.
Correct. Should I get this for my Nook? Or should I go get the hard copy?
I haven't
looked at it that way yet, so I don't know. But I'm still a book-in-hand person.
Yes.
It has a shiny cover.
It does. There's some shininess.
Okay, well, that's pretty appealing. And there is apparently no... I would at least show it to you, but there's no free sample. And now I'm torn between
the
physical copy over there and getting the...
They could sign it, and you probably don't want their signature in Sharpie all the way across your Nook screen.
I don't know. It's a Nook. You know...
It's
fine.
Disposable technology. It's planned obsolescence.
Yeah, I love my little Nook. Do you guys see? You're still not the digital book types. I would actually let's talk about design currency in a minute, but let's talk about reading books.
If I'm reading for pleasure, I want a paperback.
Really?
I don't even like hardback books. Like, I want to be able to like bend it in half if I need to.
Is that just for like comfortable reading position?
I don't know. Or like if I get like Cheeto fingers on it or something, there's no guilt with it.
Gotcha.
Like you should be able to take a paperback in the bathtub if you need it. Yeah.
Yeah, I still like books. I'm even going to go on a limb and say I still like newspapers.
Shut up.
Yeah,
that's
crazy.
Just
I know.
Actually, and when you say it like that, it sounds classy as
shit. And here's my logic. I've noticed that from a behavioral standpoint, when I'm looking at the New York Times online, I just look at the articles that I want to look at, and then I search for very specific things or go to very specific sections. But when I have a physical newspaper in my hand, I flip through and headlines catch my eye, and I end up reading things that I may have not been interested in the first place.
I'm reading the newspaper in totally new ways because we get the New York Times on the weekend, and I haven't read it in like 6 months because I've been too busy.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm mulching the garden and putting down paper first and then putting mulch over top. And as I'm putting down the paper from March, I'm like, this stuff is fascinating. Like, look at these articles.
Can I just look out the back window and there's Jen just like in the garden just on her knees just like reading the paper?
Sometimes.
Good stuff.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you know, things catch your eye and you read it. I think it's a different experience. I'm nervous about the day where we only see the content that we want to see or that people think we should see.
Well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to, on a weekly basis, just send you like random internet links.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
There's got to be a service.
Because
if they're coming from you,
let
me tell you about.
I will
Reddit.
Curate them for things that you should be reading.
That sounds perfect.
I don't think this should just be for me. I think this could be for everybody. I think you're sitting on a gold mine.
I think we call it donovanslinks.com.
Correct.
It's Donovan's. So SakioGrady-hyphenated.com and .net. Let's be honest. And then
is
Donovan
there,
links.
Is there like a links like a Donovan's dot links?
I think it's just got to be. LINX, and then we get
the X makes it kind
dot INX, which is probably for
I'm seeing a cat logo, Donovan Links.
Oh, God, yes.
I'm feeling, ooh,
the best kind of links.
Like the play cats.
That could be yours now that Apple has moved on to California places.
Yeah.
Okay. And what is design currency? We were going to talk
about that? Okay.
Is design currency? It is out. Today,
demonstrating.
Now you guys actually had. You guys have actually had books. And you did have a signing of the books in Cleveland, like just a couple days ago, right?
We just had an AIGA social hour kind of thing because we still didn't have books yet at the time, so we were just giving away.
So you just
signing coupon codes. And
were you signing Nooks like
friends.
Ahead of time and say, you know, I'm going to sign your Nook now, and then when you download it, it'll be there.
No.
If you just sign the front of a Nook and then open to the first interior page,
they
signed your book.
Right.
And every other page in the book, too.
Yeah.
Is it exciting?
And every other
book. Books, yeah.
And every other book. Look at my Ken and Jen signed copy of The Hobbit.
They call me Ishmael.
Well, J.R. Tolkien is unfortunately not around to sign it anymore.
Yeah,
so.
right. So I feel like that's a good substitution.
Correct.
So... you mentioned a few minutes ago before we've gotten wildly off topic as we are wont to do. This is about proving and demonstrating value, I would imagine, to clients, internal departments. Talk to me about the book.
I think we're thinking that...
I thought it was just about designing dollar bills.
It started out that way, Donovan.
You want a lot of really tiny words. You want to hide clues about the history of the world in it so that eventually people can follow those clues to treasure.
Yeah, I was thinking Nicolas Cage would be, if our book becomes a movie, it'll be perfect.
Mm-hmm. There are clues like that in the book.
You want to get Nicolas Cage to play Ken?
He'll sign on any movie.
Yeah, he'll. We know that Nicolas Cage will take a role.
Yeah.
All right.
I could live with that.
So design currency is targeted at anyone who feels like they've been kicked around a little bit lately, mm-hmm. By the market or by crowdsourcing or by not getting the latest promotion, and anywhere where they thought they weren't able to prove the value of the design work that they did. And I think most of the time we're kind of internal as a group, like we're having happy hours with other designers, and so it's a preaching to the choir thing, and we all sort of inherently understand the value of design and what it can do and the power of it. Design currency is for anyone who feels like they have a tough time articulating that to an external body.
I think, too, that when John and I were working on this project early on, and we had already signed the contract with the folks at Pearson about this topic, that's right when AIGA started moving to the justified competition. And there was a big discussion within the AIGA community.
In getting rid of the 365.
Yeah, specifically.
We call it Paulagate because Paula came out with her unjustified rant on.
There were a lot of responses to that. And it seemed to kind of strike a nerve in the design community because there's a lot of folks out there who don't even know how to go about starting to think about proving value or talking about value beyond aesthetics.
Right.
And so we felt like we wanted to write a book that was a conversation starter and just start providing some basic frameworks that we all can follow and look to start that conversation or start having that conversation.
And like our other two books, it's not a deep dive book. It's sort of skimming a lot of different ideas on how you might be able to prove value. Because what we found is everybody is practicing in different markets in different ways, and there's no one-size-fits-all. Like if you're in-house somewhere, you might be doing something different than a sole proprietor would be doing. And so we're trying to come up with lots of different options and show what some generalized best practices are. We've got a ton of case studies in the back of the book because the one thing that we do whenever we write a book, it's almost like we're doing giant book reports for the design industry.
I know.
It's like a book report, kids.
Boy, that just
all that all that you're doing is eliminating future competition for book deals. So.
Right now I can see those books flying off the shelves.
But we have met so many cool people at conferences and through AIGA that we're going out and telling the stories of what other designers are doing. And so in the case study section of the book, we've got some really big companies and how they're going about proving value. And then we've got folks who are, two people with a startup who decided to start an entrepreneurial venture, and that's how they're generating value. And so the range is big, and hopefully we've got a handful of international studies proving on a large scale, with like thousands of people interviewed, and we're sort of doing executive summaries of what those studies are. Like I said, it's like a book report.
What was the most fascinating case study that each of you found?
Well, they are all fascinating.
But I mean, which is the one
every
that you
single
like,
one of them.
That you
That's
had,
like picking a favorite child.
Oh, I think that Justin Aaron's case study his is always the most fascinating.
The dreamiest.
And Vaughn has a case study in there too, and his is fascinating.
Okay, now that they've heard their name, they've turned it off. So, what was like the one thing you found out? Was there something that you guys discovered while doing this book that you didn't plan to from one of these case studies?
There's something we discovered that proves what your gut instinct is. And so, again, it's this idea of preaching to the choir and what we are all kind of like inherently knowing about it. But we found a study, the Danish one.
Oh, yeah, the Danish Design Center. It's a... So part of this is that, Jen and I had to read a bunch of very dry academic articles and reports.
Thank you for doing that.
So
that we
don't have
report,
so that we don't have to.
And there's some really fascinating studies that have been done about the positive correlation between design and economic value and economic value generation. And so there's this organization, the Danish Design Center, kind of like AIGA or RGD or Design Council. And they created this tool called the Design Staircase. And it has four different levels. Level one being zero. The company doesn't use design at all. Level two is using design in kind of like an aesthetic way. It's like a surface treatment. Step three is using design as process, and then step four is using design as a comprehensive strategy for a company. And what they found is that as companies move up that ladder, they're more profitable as a whole, that they're 2.5 times more likely to see increased return than companies that are on the bottom two levels of the ladder. And so it really makes a strong argument for designers being a part of new product development or new service development, or being, you know, at those leadership tables. And it shows that there's a positive correlation between economic performance and these practices, rather than designers just saying, well, no, we need a place on the table because we're smart, we're smart. Yeah. It's like, well, now there's proof. Well,
you need to be able to say something better than, well, just look at Apple, you guys.
Right.
Yeah. Well, because it's lately Apple is not as... It's still doing good.
We're going to talk about you had something you wanted to say. You had something you wanted to say.
Well, so was it part of that same study, or is a study that was correlating? But they broke it up into functional design and experiential design, because they figured that design couldn't do all the same things. I don't have the book in front of me right now, and honestly, a lot of it was written between 4 and 5 a.m. And so it's back deep in the brain.
That was from the Erasmus University in the Netherlands. Different report.
Yeah, my bad. But so... experiential was anything that sort of evokes an emotive connection, anything that was aesthetic, and then functional were things like
wayfinding, usability,
that sort of thing, right?
Okay.
And what they found was that when you got user feedback on the functional design, it went up, right? So if you've got a keyboard and we do something to adjust the keyboard, it makes it easier for you to use, the keyboard will then be easier for everyone to use.
And profits go up because of that.
But with the experiential design, so the aesthetic stuff, you know, the look and feel of a new brand, if we get user feedback, like a focus group, it's death to the project, and profits go down. Because as soon as you get a group of people who are non-designers in a room and they get to give you feedback on what something looks like, or the sort of creative experience around it.
So it's double-blind, peer-reviewed... empirical research that shows that focus groups are death to all.
Yeah, and I think that was the Apple thing when Steve Jobs was there, as he didn't like any of it. Like, he's like, we're trying to do stuff. If you're trying to do stuff people have never seen visually, focus group only wants stuff that's familiar.
Yeah, focus group will mitigate it and make it something into something that they've already seen before.
And that kind of research is usually, I mean, great up front. We're working on a project right now where we've been in like stakeholder and audience interviews for like the last like 4 weeks. We're not going to do that again 6 weeks from now when we have design. We're going to use that up front to be a starting point, to be a level set for the project, but not later on, because that would it's great that now we have a place to go for research to say, nope, here's the study. Please, God, don't do this.
Yeah, focus groups, I think when you use them ethnographically, if you're using them to collect, you know, behavioral insights or user insights, they're a great tool. But the focus is different, right? It's not the user said this, so we're going to do this. We can't take them literally. We have to say, okay, well, why did they say that? And then what can we do as designers to meet the need of why they said that?
Well, that's fascinating. Well, the book is Design Currency, and when we come back, we're going to wrap this up. And Jen and Ken Visaki with Jen and Ken Visaki O'Grady.
Awesome. So, I mean, one of the we spend a lot of time. I work for a company called VML now. We make the internet. A lot of companies make the internet. We're not the only one making the internet, but we...
You and Al Gore's company.
I feel like...
Al Gore's a sausage grinder, just grinding out the internet.
Yep.
just making more
just
internet.
Just sitting there with his beard, with his Gore beard grown out a little bit more.
The problem is you sit there and use the internet, it gets used up, and you need more.
You gotta make more internet.
It's a series of tweets.
Kind of lumberjacky. I really
internet
like
is not a truck.
Wait a second, is Al Gore a hipster now?
What do you mean now?
He might be the
prototypical.
Yeah, I mean,
no, he wasn't.
Come on, he's walking around looking like Yukon Cornelius.
If he's in skinny jeans.
Why do all hipsters look like Yukon Cornelius?
I don't know.
Putting that out there, hipsters.
Right. So I was gonna say that I feel like it's easier for us, and it's a large part of our business. We have a whole department chock full of highly intelligent people that make sure that any amount of work that we do for our clients is something that we can measure.
It's great.
And that, because of the nature of the web and how easy it is to tell what a person is doing and for how long they're doing it on a website and projecting behavior out from that, it makes it easy for us, I think, to build a case that things either are or are not working.
Right.
Even if you want to track that all the way down to a conversion or a purchase, or if you're just talking about engagement and things bouncing around the like the social media sphere, we did you guys? I don't mean to do this for horn tooting, but did you guys hear about the teenagers who built a car that ran on social media, that ran on tweets?
No. That's awesome.
Awesome. I'm actually it's kind of cool. It kind of made the rounds. So anyway, that was a thing that my team worked on.
That's pretty cool.
And we found out not all that long ago that our impressions on that for non-paid media, like earned media, was something in the neighborhood of 500 million people.
That's amazing.
Of all the different people that it reached, and through all of these different channels and all of these different media, and you know, from blog posts to tweets to YouTube views to things like that, and that is apparently pretty easy for us to track because of the nature of our business. What have you guys found about a more traditional design-based or advertising-based agencies doing non-interactive work that's more difficult to measure? What do you guys like to think of as some best practices for how to measure that and how to put that in front of your clients?
You know, I think that you know, going back to these conversations about focus groups and about research, you know, I think that a lot of this idea of setting metrics and measuring design's impact is coming from interaction in UX. Just like everything that we talked about, you know, we were talking about with research, started to trickle into design conversations or design dialogues because it was coming from UX, but it was also going back as far as when I wrote my thesis in 1999. A lot of the same conversations were happening when people were trying to figure out, you know, software design.
Yep.
And so, you know, they're kind of like the same conversations. They're just finding their way into different homes, I think. And so I think that a lot of those same principles can be applied. I think that where we struggle as a community is that most design firms or most design agencies that are under, you know, between 6 and 10 people mm-hmm. don't have the ability to do the things that you're talking about.
Right.
They just don't have the scope.
Too many people in the office.
So, yeah. You know, the way that we think about it, and you know, web analytics are one thing because there's ways you can do that, but part of it is just thinking about how you're framing what you're doing so that, you know, even just thinking about your project in simple terms like goals, outputs, and outcomes,
mm-hmm.
right? And that the outcomes relate back to the goals, and that when you are selling your services and selling the work that you do, that you're always talking about it in terms of goals, outputs, mm-hmm. and then outcomes.
And so the outputs would be the artifacts that most designers are generally hired to create, but that you start a conversation with the client that you go into the project with talking about the goals ahead of time so that you're both tracking all the way down to those outcomes, not just mm-hmm. focusing on, I'll hire you to do this one output.
Right.
I think that different things, package design is one of the things that's easy to track. You know, oftentimes
right.
we grab something and it's never been advertised before, but we just see this beautiful package on a shelf, and so we can attribute a lot to the design of it, and it's easier to sort of gauge ROI on what that package design was.
Especially with something like tied to sales data systems. You can say, okay, you know, on Tuesday we launched a new package design for this brand, and by next Tuesday we saw sales go up or down X%.
Right. I think it's harder for design in a traditional standpoint because there are so many other factors that affect the outcome of the work. And so I think it's really just sitting down and having an honest discussion of like, hey, we want to measure something. Let's figure out what that is together, and let's make sure that this is an accurate representation of the work that you hired us to do and the success and outcome of the project.
And it's giving designers in those, I think the book is targeted at smaller people, whether it's a freelancer, you know, sole proprietors, maybe small teams that don't have those massive resources mm-hmm. like you've got at work. What are a variety of ways we can do that? So if this isn't a good fit for the kind of project we're on because there is no web tracking, you know, what can we do to still have those conversations? And I think that in all of our books, the thing we want to do is arm designers with an ability to start having those conversations with their clients so they become partnerships. We're both working towards this end goal. We're sharing common language about how we're going to get to that goal, and we're working together. You can't let the client tell you what the measurement tools are going to be in the metrics, because if they're the only ones that decide, I think you're at a disadvantage. So you need to kind of come to it together and make sure that you're being sort of judged on what you laid out.
Right. And I think it's talking about value in different ways. And so that, you know, if we're talking about all these hard numbers, right, that's all hard value. You can measure it. It's objective. You can see it. You can track it. You know, but then what are those softer things that design is also doing? That, you know, how is it relating to people in terms of, you know, impressions of a brand or how they feel about something? You know, what are those positive attributes and how can that be measured? It's kind of like the difference between, you know, quantitative and qualitative analytics.
Right. Well, I almost feel like in the designers that I know or, you know, people that I've seen or worked with, I almost feel like we, as a profession, tend to gravitate to measurement through the what you call those softer things. How do people feel about a brand? They're going to see this new design for our packaging, or they're going to see this incredible new catalog that we're mailing out to all of our customers. And we, instead of looking at, are sales impacted? Are they going up or down? Are more people calling the line? Are we getting, you know, stronger measurable engagement from our customers? They're looking at, well, do people like it? Or do they like your brand more? And I feel like it's almost problematic for us, but it's I think because of our backgrounds, because, you know, maybe because we're all, you know, liberal arts majors at heart, right, that we trend towards that,
yeah,
right?
We gravitate towards the soft things. And I think that, you know, having a blended approach is probably the better approach. I've read, you know, going back to one of the studies that Jim was talking about, it was the design effectiveness study from Erasmus University. You know, they found that there is a positive correlation between those soft things and profitability in design. It's not, they don't know if it's causation, but it's correlation,
right?
And so those things are still important, but I think that we just need to paint a bigger picture of what we're doing. I also think that, you know, as Jen and I were talking about this, and we kind of feel like the book that we wrote about research and this book are kind of on different ends of the same spectrum, that the research book was all about formative research and that this book is really about summative research. It's about evaluation or analysis after a project is complete so that you can see how it's performing and is it really performing the way that you thought it was going to perform or is it doing the things that you wanted it to do. But it's they're like two sides of the same coin, you know, and I think that design as a process is cyclical, and that also shows, you know, to the folks that you're working with that you are actively invested and engaged in their success. The project's not over when it's over, that you want to know that it's performing optimally for them and that, you know, you're willing to work with them to make sure that it does what you set out.
Which ultimately sets you up as a partner, right? Yeah. Rather than as a vendor. And so, you know, that's been part of the conversation in the design public for the last 10 years. But yeah. I think that these are maybe some new tools to get you into that conversation and keep you there with your
for
clients.
Sure.
The other thing that we found is that designers on their own, even as, you know, an industry, we're starting to kind of undervalue or not see all the things that we do or bring to a project. Mm-hmm. And so part of the book is really laying out, hey, you know, you think about your creative services because that's something you do every day. But here are all the other things that to do those creative services you do well. And so there's a whole section of the book on what your other skill sets are and how you may be able to leverage those into different areas of practice or to kind of up your career game or even to talk to your clients about what you can do beyond just the creative services end of things. So.
Yeah, we were talking to Joseph Duffy yesterday about how they will spend upwards of like 3 months doing a deep dive on their new clients when they start work, just, you know, before they even feel like they can talk to their clients about their business. And my first question was like, do you ever just do just that for your clients? Because that seems like a thing of such tremendous value.
A ton of value.
Yeah, that is. Yeah, it is. It's pretty amazing. And then I think too that part of this conversation is being able to explain to your clients why that is important. Mm-hmm. Because I think that we've all experienced clients that have come to us and said, "I need this. I need it now."
Well, like, yeah.
Well, you can have it that way, but it's not going to work unless we, you know, it would work better if we did this.
Okay, we're going to take one more break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to do something.
You said that last time. We're going to keep taking breaks.
I got one more thing I think we need to cover before we take off.
Okay, great. Okay, sounds good. Did you get any of that? Was that the show, or were we all on a break? I was kind of putting myself out there, man. I wasn't sure if you were recording or not.
No, I wasn't, dude. Would you like to throw it back out
there? Nah, okay, I'm fine.
So I just figured we'd do a quick wrap-up since we do have two professors here. Are you guys actually professors? Is that the titles?
Well, chair.
Jen is a full professor, and I'm an associate professor.
Okay, I know with academics, you know, they got different things, so I didn't want to just say.
You can technically call Jen professor. You have to refer to me as associate professor.
Okay. Since we have people in the professorish realm, we're going to ask each of you guys to give a student tip. My student tip is to, if you're in the Cleveland area, is to find one of the Visaki O'Grady's and have them be your instructor. So that's my student tip.
Okay, great. Do I get to do one too?
Yeah, you can do one.
Okay.
Smart to go before the chair.
Right, yeah, I don't want to go after that. I'm not going to be able to follow that. I'm going to say drop out of school and bum around Asia and Europe for a year. Then do whatever you want with your life. That's my student tip.
My student tip is it's all on you. And so I really think that students get into it, what they put into it. And the best students I've had have been the most ambitious, eager, you know, up for anything. Like they're stacking chairs in an AIGA event to get to meet speakers, and they are reading books no one's assigning them, and they're just, they are teaching me as much as I'm teaching them.
Wow, that's a really good answer. I don't know if I have anything as good as that.
Well, you have two students who have made a career out of just swearing.
Yeah, they have.
And they are brilliant. They're two of the smartest students I've ever met.
Yeah, they're way smarter than I am. I will probably be working for them in the next year or two. Hopefully, I'll be lucky to work for them.
Do you have students that work for other former students?
Isn't that crazy to think about?
It is crazy. I had that situation pop up.
You know,
not all that many years ago.
I'm really going to go back to what Jen said, and I just think that passion is important. You know, I think that when you love what you do and you put yourself into your work, I think that it shows. And I think that you have to be a proactive participant in your education. I don't think that you can be a passive bystander. Going back to what she said, you get out of it what you put into it. And I think that, you know, you need to be engaged.
Man, I feel like you're not talking about education anymore. I feel like you're talking about life. It's How to Live by Ken Visaki O'Grady, right there.
Deep thoughts.
Slow clap, ladies and gentlemen.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be back in a week or so.
Yeah, Ken, Jen, thank you guys for taking the time. Welcome to San Francisco. Awesome. It's not really our town, but, you know, you're here now. So, okay, and you guys are speaking tomorrow or a month and a half ago.
Yes. Yep.
So if you hear this in the past, make sure to check it out. I won't see you guys because my wife is speaking at the same time.
And the book is Design Currency, available on Amazon at Visaki-O'Grady.com.
Hopefully by the time this comes out.
It doesn't have the apostrophe either. You know how that goes.
Well, that's what now, see, because you'd have to put in a lot of the Unicode.
Or you just actually spell out apostrophe in the middle of it.
And like Visaki-O'Grady wasn't hard enough to spell.
You have to spell out dash O apostrophe. I'm way into this now. What is the most redonkulous URL we can get for you guys? Thank you guys so much for being on the show.
Thanks, guys.
I'm sure we'll talk to you soon.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Reflex Blue Show. For more information, visit 36point.com. The Reflex Blue Show was created by Donovan Beery and Nate Voss. Music by Ben Luters.